Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's The Burt Show.
I don't know if I'm just seeing it more now because I'm following you on Instagram, Abby, but the blowback from this Taylor Swift album seems to be more extreme this time than I think I've seen in the past.
People are so disappointed in Taylor Swift. People are acting like she personally went to their house, slapped them in the face, and then walked out without an apology. That is the reaction I'm seeing from such a massive group of people online. I don't know if I would call them Swifties because I feel like at the very least you can get some enjoyment out of an album if you enjoy the artist, unless it's heinous, which it's not.
So I listened to the album over the weekend in its entirety. And, you know, yeah, art is very subjective. I think for myself, as a person who is not a Swiftie, I was very underwhelmed. And I think it was because of the way it was presented that had my expectations so high that I'm like, ooh, this is going to be like a Reputation reincarnation. We're going to get a bunch of bangers and dance. Like, we're going to, like, it's going to just make you want to get up and dance and sing your heart out. And it was just kind of like, you know, am I mad at it? No. But I was left a little underwhelmed.
Taylor is a victim of her own branding. And I think one of the biggest criticisms I've seen people say is that she built up this album, or their interpretation of her marketing was that this was going to be an album that fit this showgirl vibe. And it was going to be a mix of 1989 and Reputation, because those are the producers that she used for this album alone. It was just her, Max Martin, and Shellback, who are known for producing some of the biggest pop bangers in history, like Hit Me Baby One More Time, you know, Maroon 5 songs. All these massive, massive pop artists have used these producers. So expectations were really high. And, you know, when you hear someone say these are going to be bangers on the New Heights podcast, you're kind of expecting every single song to really just hit. And I think in her mind, marketing it that way was going to be helpful. Whereas I think it really just set expectations that weren't able to be met. When I think really for her, this album wasn't going to be some kind of showgirl-esque album that really drew back to different eras of showgirlisms or whatever. I think she just wanted to write songs while she was on the Eras tour and be like, this was my life while I was a showgirl. And I think when you look at it from that lens, then you can enjoy it for what it is. And so for me, I'm like, this was a good album. It's not my favorite album of all time, but there's certainly some enjoyable tracks. But there is one track that I truly feel so disappointed in, so much so that it actually, you know what, it does feel a little bit like a personal attack. So there is one slow song on this pop album, and it's a song called Eldest Daughter. And if you are an eldest daughter, you know that you take that title to heart. What it truly means to be an eldest daughter is to be the firstborn daughter in your family. So for me, I'm the eldest daughter, but I'm the youngest in my family. I am the oldest daughter in my family. I am the oldest daughter in my group of cousins. I hold that title with a lot of pride, because with that comes a lot of expectations and responsibility. And it's sort of the stereotype that eldest daughters become burnt out perfectionists because they had so many expectations on them growing up. And I thought, oh my God, Taylor Swift is like the ultimate eldest daughter. She's going to write such a heartbreaking, devastating track that is going to hit home and unite the eldest daughters everywhere. And let me read some of the lyrics from Eldest Daughter. Oh, wait, sorry. I got rid of it because I was Googling other lyrics.
And we have three eldest daughters in studio right now.
We have three eldest daughters in studio. At first, when you were, Rebecca's one too.
Yeah.
At first when you were talking about this, I thought you said Elvis.
Elvis daughter?
Elvis's daughter. I'm like, what the hell? Where are we going with this?
This is not like a Lisa Marie Presley banger, but this is the chorus. But I'm not a bad bee, and this isn't Savage. But I'm never going to let you down. I'm never going to leave you out. So many traitors, smooth operators. But I'm never going to break that vow. Never going to leave you now. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, is this a love song to Travis? Using colloquialisms from the internet, talking about not being a bad bee or a savage, like a Megan Thee Stallion song. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I've never been so devastated, because I'm sitting here thinking this is going to be like my favorite Taylor Swift track of all time. And that it's really going to encapsulate what it means to be the head of your proverbial household. And here it is, just her going, Trevi, I love you.
I thought you were reciting that Rick Astley song.
Never gonna give you up.
But you never know, gonna let you down.
It feels like I got Rickrolled by Taylor Swift, because I'm sitting here, I'm like, I would almost be less offended if you just decided to do an interpolation of whatever that song is, the Rick Rolling song.
Could it be that that song is a parallel, I'm getting deep here, to like, is it White Horse? I'm not a princess. This ain't a fairy tale. I'm not a bad bee.
If
I'm
it is,
savage.
It's a bad one, Cassie.
I'm grasping at straws for you, girl.
A lot of people are grasping at straws listening to this album. But for the most part, they think the album is great. But this is the one that really disappointed me. I was like, you had an opportunity to really hit home with a large group of women who love to complain. And you missed it, just to talk about your boyfriend again.
What did she miss? If you were writing the song and wanted this to be sung for the eldest daughters, what should have been in there?
Life is hard. People should thank me more.
I think you're nailing the problem, because I love Taylor, and I also was expecting like a lot of Max Martin bops, like Kristen said, and this album's fine. And I'm not mad at her, which is where it gets weird. Like, why are people mad? But I think the problem is, if you're not going to get like cheesy, shake it off bop Taylor, then you expect lyricist, you know, almost like poet laureate Taylor. And when she doesn't deliver on either, but there's all this fuss around it, you're like, well, I feel like I just had a bait and switch, and I feel like that's where people are getting angsty. But guys, there's so much bigger stuff to worry about.
People are dying, Kim.
Yes.
I've just had such a different generation that when I hear people going online complaining to Taylor or about Taylor and literally posting about it, I'm like, what else is going on in your life?
Nothing. That's why they're online.
I guess so.
Here, Bert Show.
It is 2025. You are not in a loving, committed relationship unless it's on Instagram.
It's okay to be private. It's not okay to be a secret. And that's what Maggie was calling us up, saying that she felt like a secret because her boyfriend says that he is anti-social media. And what that means for him is he doesn't want their relationship to be posted about on social media. He doesn't want to post her on his feed, and he doesn't want her to post them on her feed, basically making her feel like she's being hidden by this guy that's a big part of her life. It's her boyfriend, and she wants to be able to share it. So she called us up saying she needed a little pep talk, trying to get to the bottom of whether or not she is being kept a secret by her boyfriend, who claims that they're just being private.
Didn't we have the suggestion that maybe she goes to him and just says, hey, I want to put this first one up, just letting everybody know I am in love with the greatest man that has ever walked the face of the earth outside of Jesus. And then I don't post again at all. That's it. That's all we need. And see if he'll go for that. That doesn't seem harmful to me.
There feels like there could be some kind of compromise here.
Right.
My opinion is it's okay for you to not want to post me on your timeline. That's totally your prerogative. But in my social media house, if you're living in my real house, you get to be in my social media house too.
All right, let's see how it went this weekend. Hey, Maggie, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
All right, so he was really against this idea. You're like, yeah, we must be social media official. How'd it go?
It did not go as planned because we are now on a break.
Come on. Really?
Over social media? Yeah.
Over this?
Yes.
Every breakup starts with a break. It's like K Jewelers. Every kiss begins with K. Every breakup begins with a break.
We need to workshop that.
Yeah. That's why I'm not getting hired again.
What happened, Maggie? Yeah.
So I tried to have this conversation with him. I psyched myself up. You know, I was like, you're not crazy. This is totally valid. You just want to express, you know, you just want to show off your freaking boyfriend. So I even rehearsed what I was going to say in the car on the way home. And then that night we were watching TV, and I almost talked myself out of it because he just seemed like he was in a good mood. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do I really want to fight over Instagram? Like, so I almost let it go, but then I was like, it matters to me. It matters. So let's just
I've done this a million times in relationships. Like, you know, you have that tough conversation and you're almost like looking for a reason not to have it. So they come in the door, they're in a good mood. You're like, oh, not today. And then they come in the door the next day and they're bummed out. And you're like, that's not a good day either.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Need them to be indifferent.
Yeah.
And so I just tried to be calm and honest about it. And I was like, it's not, you know, it's not about showing off. I just want to be seen. I want to feel comfortable, like, posting, you know, anything and not feel that I'm going to get judged about it or he's going to ask me to take it down. Because I share everything. I post all my family. I post my friends, my dog, coffee, whatever. So I don't understand what's wrong with wanting to post my boyfriend. And at first he's, you know, he just goes, you know, and says the same things, like, it's not real life. People only post the highlights, that kind of stuff. I don't want it to start drama in our relationship, you know, and I get that, but I'm also like, I'm not posting, but I also said I'm not posting, you know, people can send messages too. Like maybe he's trying to look single or keep his options open. Like he doesn't want to be seen on social media with a girl. And so a half, you know, kind of half joking, I asked, is there some, you know, there's nothing to hide. Can I just see your DMs? And I just got an instant shutdown. He got defensive immediately and said that I was being controlling, said I, you know, I shouldn't, you know, he just doesn't trust. He needs, you know, I said that need proof and his tone totally changed and I could feel a wall go up. So long story short, we got into it, you know, we yelled a little bit. I think he just needs some space and now we're officially on a break.
All right, so when you suggest the DMs, what's his reasoning for you not being able to look at those?
He just got defensive. Like he just, you know, I shouldn't have to see anything to trust him, that kind of thing. And he doesn't really use social media, so why would there be anything there?
It's this classic where you're having an argument with somebody and they turn it around on you and you request something that you feel is reasonable. And then they're like, oh, this is a sign that you don't trust me. How dare you not trust me? And taking it like even the request is an infraction.
Yeah, the manipulation, right. The gaslighting, it's typical right here. So then he's the one that says, well, if you don't trust me, then maybe we should just go on a break.
Yeah. So he said I crossed the line by asking, you know, for these messages and, you know, just to check his DMs. Because, I mean, if I can't post them, then what's he hiding? Why is he trying to hide the world? You know, and so he just feels like he's innocent. And I don't understand. You know, I just don't understand why a big reaction if he is innocent. And I don't know, maybe I just pushed too hard or
no, you
didn't. The truth hit him. I don't know.
This is what he wants you to think right here. This is exactly what he wants you to think, that this is your fault. It is not.
And it's not like you came out of the blue, right? Like if my husband were to come to me or if I were to go to my husband with no reasoning whatsoever and just been like, let me see your DMs. Well, yeah, that would be off-putting. I would be like, why? Like, why do you need to see my DMs? Like, where is this coming from? And I think that's a legitimate question to ask, but you already gave the why. He refuses to post you. He refuses to allow you to post him. So that's why you asked about the DMs. It's not like this came out of the blue. So for him to have that reaction, then that's, girl, it's sus. Very, very sus.
Yeah, Abby, where you at?
He's giving you reasons, or he's giving you explanations that back up your reasoning. He's like, well, I'm not even on social media that much, so there's nothing to see. Okay, my guy, if there's nothing to see, then why are you so defensive about me looking at your DMs? This guy sounds not just shady, he's hiding something.
For sure. Yeah. So where is this now? Like, you're supposed to reach out to him, he's supposed to reach out to you. What? Because if I'm you, I'm not doing anything. I'm letting him come to you.
That's kind of how I feel. Like, I don't want to chase him. If he's not interested in letting me post a freaking picture, then I'm not going to, I don't want to call him constantly. I don't want to have to chase him down. So I'm just going to give it a little space. We'll see.
For sure. All right. Keep us posted. Let us know what's going on. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I keep pulling my headphones out.
I was about to say, it was like, someone's so
excited. You're very excited. You're all over the place today.
Hands are so animated.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We've been taking a look back at 25 years of Burt Show memories, as the last Burt Show is going to be October 24th, sadly. Weird. It's weird to say still. 15 shows. Not even.
Yeah, we got you got 14 shows in 1 hour.
Yeah, right. I said this a couple of days ago, and I really, really mean it, even though this sounds like a cliche. The legacy that I want this show to leave behind more than anything else when people are looking back at Atlanta history, radio history, is the fact that we all, not the people in the studio, but you guys listening, this whole Burt Show community was able to galvanize and do so much good for the community, right? We played the Will Stark segment a couple of days ago where you guys raised over $250,000 for one Burt's Big Adventure dad that really, really needed it. And here's another one. When we did the big thank you, these were handwritten letters. We had this idea on Thanksgiving to make sure that every soldier, is it soldier?
Every service person
that was deployed outside the United States on Thanksgiving would get a handwritten letter from somebody in the United States of America. Every single one, no matter where they were stationed, would get a handwritten letter. You know how hard it is to get people to write a handwritten letter?
Oh, we knew how hard it was, because it was a hard putt, because that was my first year on the show. My brother was deployed at the time, and he got one of the care packages, the big thank you care packages. We were a little slow out the gate. We didn't know if we were going to hit our mark. And then something just inspired the Burt Show community. And we, I think, far exceeded the number that we needed to get.
Oh, yeah. That first year, and we'll get to the number in just 1 second. The goal here that you guys really believed in also was that, you know, when they're doing those mail roll calls that you see in like TV shows or movies or whatever, we wanted everybody's name to be mentioned in those roll calls and every hand to go up like, oh my God, I got a letter from home. That's what we really wanted. So in 2011, on Veterans Day, after doing our big thank you, we got 650,000 handwritten letters.
Oh my God. That was crazy that year.
Let that number wash over you. 650,000 handwritten letters. And mission was completed. Every single person in the military that was outside the United States on Thanksgiving. 650,000?
Wow. I remember being in the vacant room here in the building. So we're in like an office building, and there's always a floor that's like under construction or nobody is renting, right? Renting space or leasing space. And that was the year when it was like bare bones. We didn't have a big thank you committee. Yeah, yes, there were some volunteers, but Tommy Owen was the one that oversaw this project. And he had his phone, and I will never forget this.
This is what you're going to bring up.
So we're in the room, and I mean, we were putting in hours making sure we had enough letters, and Tommy is going through, and the way they were like bundled and in bins, and he's counting on the, and he got almost to the end of 650,000, right? And he's like counting them, and he lost track.
Oh, no.
That man.
No, I think I hit the wrong button on my iPhone, my calculator.
You did, and it like zeroed out, and you're like, like it was like, and he chucked his phone across the room, like literally, and just like walked out of the room because he had been so stressed, because this was such a huge undertaking. So I went and I picked up Tommy's phone and I counted the letters for him.
This would be the equivalent of Tommy finding out that Bucky's went bankrupt. It would be that kind of emotional response. Cass, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, when you say handwritten letter, like, you mean it. We didn't allow, I don't think we allowed photocopies.
No.
We didn't allow typed letters, and there was no ChatGPT to write the letter for you.
Yeah, right.
So a lot of them had illustrations. Like, it truly was a movement from the heart. And I feel so bad about Tommy's calculator error, because had I known, And this is something everyone needs to know. If you mess up on your calculator and iPhone, you can shake
Shut
the
up.
Phone
Don't
to
tell
do
me.
Undo.
You can what?
Just shake your phone and it will undo the last step. Oh,
even in 2011?
Uh-huh. They featured the shake thing in 2009.
Well, I will tell you, Cassie, it was quite shaken when I threw it across the room. And when Kristen picked it up, it still said zero.
Yeah.
I remember just these avalanche of calls coming in from like Delta flight attendants that were demanding everybody on the flight write a letter and giving them letters and pencils and pens to write with. There were teachers that were demanding it of all of their students. There were different mom and pop stores and big stores also that had these big cartons of paper. Just, hey, before you check out today, just write a thank you letter. And everybody was doing it.
Wow. Yeah. It was, but even like even more so after the fact. So the letters go out and then a couple weeks go by. And then we start getting responses and like servicemen and women are calling the show because we had a cover letter in there explaining like what this is, what this campaign is, why we're doing it, et cetera. And then people who sent letters, they also included return addresses if they wanted to start like a pen pal or whatever. In like classes, we're getting responses back from men and women in the military. Like it was just, it was a really cool domino effect.
So in 2011, we get a call from First Lady Michelle Obama.
No.
Yes, to thank us. Now, this was a different time.
Not to thank you guys.
To thank you guys. Not nearly as divisive, but I don't care, man. Even today, when the First Lady of the United States of America calls. I don't care if she's Republican, Democrat. I don't care. It's a very big deal. And she was really calling, like Kristen said, to thank you guys for 650,000 handwritten letters. Michelle Obama.
Hi.
Mrs. Obama?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. It is such an honor to be talking to you on the phone right now.
How are you all doing?
Doing great. Well, thank you so much for calling us. We really, really appreciate it.
Who do I have? I know I've got Bert. Where's Bert?
I'm Bert.
Hey, Bert.
Hi.
Who else is there?
I'm Jen. Nice to meet you.
And great to meet you.
And this is Kristen. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Obama.
Kristen, so nice to see you. Thank you so much.
And I'm Wendy. So
and
excited
Wendy.
To talk to you. Yes, ma'am.
We have so many. We have so many people on this show that it's going to take up 3/4 of our time to introduce ourselves.
Well, you're never lonely.
Right? That's totally true. That's totally true.
Thing. Like me, I'm rarely alone. I'm surrounded by people. It's a good thing. As long as you like each other.
Is it the kind of thing where you get up in the morning and people pretty much are directing you exactly where to go all day long?
You know, I can usually get out of bed, have breakfast, get dressed on my own, but after that, it's over.
Well, we're very glad that they got the number right, and we're glad you called today.
Well, I am. I just had to call you guys when I heard about your big thank you campaign, because this is exactly the kind of outreach and activity that we love to see that means so much to our men and women in uniform. And the fact that you set, which was a phenomenal goal of sending 400,000 letters to our men and women serving overseas, but that you then exceeded that and have over 600,000 letters written, that is truly amazing, and that's the reason why I just had to call in and thank your team and your listeners for stepping up over the holidays. I've had the privilege of meeting with so many men and women in uniform and their families, and it really means so much to them, these small gestures, just knowing that they live in a country where people appreciate their sacrifice and service, and these letters are going to make the world of difference. So I just had to call and congratulate you all for pulling this tremendous achievement off.
You know, Mrs. Obama, I haven't even told the rest of the staff yet exactly how many letters we have received.
No, you're fine.
I wanted you to tell
beans?
Them. We're actually at 650,000 letters, you guys.
Wow.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 650,000 now.
That is beyond anything that you can imagine. And I think that you guys serve as an example of what Americans are willing to do if asked. And that's really the premise behind our Joining Forces campaign. We know that our nation values our troops and the families who serve alongside them. But so often, if you're not living near a base, if you don't have a family member serving, if you don't know if someone's serving, you don't necessarily know the sacrifice. So we want to be in that position to encourage community groups and organizations and businesses to make that ask, to figure out how in their own spheres they can encourage people to reach out to these individuals who are doing so much for us. And big thank you is just one of those shining examples. So you all should really be proud of yourselves as well as your listeners, because I certainly am.
Thank you. Thank you. So when you hear that number, 650,000, what statement does that make to you about people's attitude towards the military?
Well, it's what I've seen. It's that we are proud of our country, and we're proud of the people who, because truly there, when you think about it, there is 1% of our country that is serving, and they are protecting the rights of the other 99% of us. That's just 1%, a very small fraction of the population. And I have always known that the rest of us are willing and eager to step up if asked, if we give people parameters around which they can act. I think a lot of people think that they have to be a military expert or live near a base or do something, some grand gesture to have an impact. But what these 600,000 letters show is that people are just eager to do whatever they think will make a difference in the lives of our men and women in uniform. And it doesn't take much more than a thank you, a letter, an acknowledgement. So I think this validates what I already know about our country, is that we are full of individuals who are ready to step up when called to act.
First Lady Michelle Obama joining the Burt Show this morning.
Mrs. Obama, when you become the First Lady, how do you decide which campaigns to launch and which campaigns to support in your position?
You know, for me, I operate from a place of passion, because I figure I'm going to be the most authentic and the most effective around issues that I personally care deeply about. And over the course of the campaign, you know, before my husband was elected and I was out there traveling around the country, I spent a lot of time meeting primarily with women and mothers juggling, you know, work and family life balance, because I wanted to make sure their voices were heard in the course of the campaign. But every time I met with a group of women, no matter where I went, there were new voices that I hadn't heard before, and they were voices of military spouses who were managing all of the same problems and issues all the rest of us were, but in addition, they were dealing with their fourth deployment. They were dealing with their seventh move. They were dealing with the fact that their kids were in their 10th school. And these women primarily, but also men, were doing all of this sacrificing all in the shadows, with no complaints, with no regrets, just with a huge sense of pride. And I sort of connected with those individuals and said to myself then that if my husband got elected, I would use this platform to help shine a light on these phenomenal individuals. And I was fortunate enough that my husband selected Joe Biden, who was married to Jill Biden, who is a Blue Star mom, who also had a passion for this issue. So it really comes out of my own personal experience. While I'm not didn't grow up in a military family, I did come to know these individuals over the course of my work traveling around the country, and they just blew my mind. And I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything in my power to lift them up and to rally the country around supporting them.
Do you find that the decisions about the military are the most stressful for the president?
He takes his responsibilities as commander-in-chief deeply, seriously, because, you know, you're dealing with the lives of young people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've ever gone on a base or visited a military hospital and you go into the rooms of the wounded, people who have lost limbs and have severe burns and whose lives are going to be impacted forever, these are kids, you know. They're 19, they're 20, they're 18. When you go on these bases and you see commanders and officers, they're young men, many of them, and women who are disciplined and passionate and so incredibly smart. You can't have these experiences and not take the role of Commander-in-Chief seriously. So yes, I do know that the decisions that involve our military weigh heavily on my husband, no matter what those decisions and issues are going to be. And that's why this administration has invested so much in improving veterans' affairs. Part of the reason why I've been able to be so successful with joining forces is that truly this mission comes from the top. It's the president, the vice president, on down. Everybody believes that if we are going to have an all-voluntary military, then we have to serve them as well as they serve us. And that's not just when they're wearing the uniform, but it's after they've worn the uniform, after these wars are over. This is a forever commitment that we have to make to these men and women and to their families.
We're going to be gushing with gratitude, and I am beyond proud to be a part of a military family. My dad is a Vietnam veteran. My brother is currently deployed to Afghanistan and serving as a staff sergeant in the Marines. And with the timing of our conversation and Veterans Day, what would you like Americans to reflect on and really remember what is important about Veterans Day?
Well, I think that we have to remember that the freedoms that we enjoy here in this country are ones that have been hard fought by men and women for generations, our veterans, and the sacrifice for many, for a Gold Star family who has made the ultimate sacrifice, who's lost someone, you can't put into words the cost. So on this day, let's remember that every day we have to honor these individuals in whatever way works best for us. As we say in Joining Forces, our motto is everyone can do something. And the key is finding the something that you do best and finding a way to connect that to the needs and challenges and issues facing our veterans and their families. And the other part that I would encourage people to remember is that it's not just the men and women who serve, but it is their families. As a military kid, how much sacrifice and stress that you undergo just having your loved ones in harm's way. And we have to keep lifting people like you up because you may not be wearing a uniform, but the burden is just as great, and I have seen it up close and personal. So we can't forget our veterans, our troops, or our military families, and this is the perfect day to reinvest or invest, if you haven't already, in some act of kindness and connection with a military family in your midst.
Mrs. Obama, thank you so much for your time. What an honor to talk to you. And I know it's going to mean so much to our Burt Show listening community that you took the time to honor their efforts the last couple of weeks. So thank you so much.
Well, everyone should be proud of themselves. This, it is my great honor to be able to call you guys and congratulate you on such a big effort. Just keep it going. And again, congratulations. You all have a reason to celebrate. So thanks for letting me call in.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
The Burt Show.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.